Hey, Zach here to talk to you a little bit about this episode. We decided to review Monopoly Gamer because one of my favorite podcasts, Flip the Table, is ending after many years of providing entertainment for everybody. Flip the Table is a show where they reviewed and tried to, make suggestions to improve cheesy, weird, and obscure board games. Basically the garbage that everybody looked down on and didn't like. Franchise games, roll and move games, spin and move games, huzzah. And they just basically, these guys were amazing. They took nothing and made something truly incredible about it. And it was honestly one of my favorite things to listen to every single month when they would put out a new episode. They've been doing this for years. They had put out well over 100 episodes now, and their final episode is airing this month. If you've never heard of Flip the Table, please go back and find their backlog and listen to it. You will not be sorry. So the moderator, Chris, of Flip the Table, is a big champion of Monopoly. He loves the game. And Monopoly is one of the most derided games in the gaming community. Some people love it. Most people hate it. I'm not a huge fan of the game. I've played it as a kid. I don't have too many fond memories of it. But for this episode, as a kind of thank you to Flip the Table for everything that they've done, we decided to review Monopoly Gamer, which is the new edition that came out this current month. And honestly, spoiler alert, we had a good time with it. And it was just, Flip the Table has reminded me many times over that it doesn't matter what game you are playing. If you're having fun, then it's a good game. And we just want to say thank you to Flip the Table for everything that they've done. And this is my way of doing it. For moderator Chris, for Flip Flory, for Jared Hunnefeld, Professor Laserbooks, and anyone else who has contributed to Flip the Table, these are the best people that I would want to be friends with that I have never met. And honestly, it's very sad to see them go. And I hope and wish them luck in all future projects, whatever they may be. Bored with Friends, episode 29. Monopoly Gamer.
I mean, I'm not allowed to tell that story because Zach wants to stay on topic.
Stay on topic.
All right, well, we got a little off topic.
Again, 40%. I'm lazy and I'm a mooch. What I do.
This is not that kind of podcast.
Welcome to Bored with Friends, the podcast about hobby gaming and proving that roll and move is not a dirty word. I'm Zach Dyer, and on today's episode, I am joined by Devin Decker.
Yo, Devin Decker!
Aw, he says it so much better than me. And returning, Sean Bissonette.
When was the last time you guys thought about the Nickelback song Spider-Man song? And they say...
I don't think that was actually a Nickelback song. I think it was just the singer from Nickelback, right?
It was Chad Kroeger, specifically as like a single artist at that time. And here's the best part, though. Sean said, "When's the last time you thought about that Nickelback song?" And my mind was like, "He's gonna bring up Spider-Man 2, isn't he?"
Yeah, yeah.
Of course he is.
I don't even know why. I was just driving home from work, and there was construction, and I was just like, "And they say that a hero can save us," and I don't know why. But that's what popped into my head when I was in the car. And I was like, oh, man, I'm going to use that on the podcast because I never know what to say when it's my turn.
I actually, when anime music videos were the cool thing to do, I did one to that song for, I think it was all the Optimus Primes that to date at the time of making that video.
I'm real happy you were able to get it in that 1 month that they were popular in 2004. Nice job. Well,
I thought so, right? Hold on.
First of all, it was like more like 2002, 2003, because I would go on Kazaa at my Meme and Papa's house and download all of the Dragon Ball AMVs constantly.
There's a... the poor man's Napster.
Yep. And that in between Napster and LimeWire, just for like a brief 6 month window, there was Kazaa, and it was amazing.
And it worked really well. I remember that one. Anyway, we're here to talk about board games, aren't we?
but we could also talk about that really, really great AMV, which was Kryptonite, but it was all Gohan scenes. I really like that one.
I remember that one. Oh, man. That was one of my inspirations to do AMVs for Transformers.
Right?
Oh, man. Can't find any of those anymore because YouTube just bans them all, but whatever.
You know what? You intro the show. I'm going to see if they exist because I have to know right now.
Oh, okay.
I just have to say for the record, Spider-Man 2 was 2004. That's all I was basing it off of. I'm sorry I was internet illiterate even back then.
Spider-Man 2 was
Gohan Kryptonite. Boom. It's here. Last 11 years on YouTube.
Wow.
How many views has it gotten in 11 years?
682,000. You'd think it would have more. It's a really great video. Although there are several different versions of this.
Yeah, a lot of people ripped that off, I bet. A lot of people stole my music videos from the website I had at the time and ripped them off and put them on YouTube. But that's a whole different argument.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, back to board games. It's been a while since we've chatted. But I've been getting a lot of gaming in this month, and particularly I wanted to talk about a Kickstarter that came in the mail. We actually got to interview this gentleman, Jerison Baines. This was back in September of last year we interviewed him. He had started a $1 pledge level board game called Stellar Armada. And it finally came in. I had gotten the deluxe version, which came in a card pack. And it had a few extra bells and whistles to it, as opposed to coming in a little baggy. And I bought two versions of it so that I could play a four-player game. And what Stellar Armada really breaks down to is it simulates ship-to-ship combat, but in a very abstract and simplistic way. You have a little card that has a layout of your ship, and it's all block format, and each of the blocks represents a different systems of your ship. And in the very center of your ship is your engine power, or the power of your ship, basically, and your most vulnerable spot. If that goes, your ship is destroyed. And it's dead simple. On your turn, you get to roll your dice and use the power that you have available to you. So you start off with 6 action points because of that power. And if more of those engines get destroyed, then you lose actions later on in the game. But you roll your dice and you can, you know, say that you want to repair systems if you've been damaged. You can fire at your opponents. You can either fire lasers or torpedoes. Torpedoes do more damage, but you have a limited supply. It was very easy to do because every single section has a little cube that will go down or up if you repair it, just to indicate where things are at. And once you get a feel for how those systems, you know, how it all works, it's dead simple, and it plays in between 5 and 10 minute rounds. And I feel like, you know, after one ship blew up, we're like, all right, let's go again. Let's set it up again. You set all the pieces up really quick, and you get going. So I was happy with it. Devin, you were in on that game. Do you want to have any thoughts on Stellar Armada?
I'm a little upset that it only cost $1 to back it, and I missed the Kickstarter because it was one of the greatest Kickstarter games I've played in a long time. Like you said, it plays really, really quickly. And, you know, just because I am that person who, like, nitpicks and looks for complaints, the only complaint I would have is that having 10 torpedoes is a bit much. But other than that, it's pure perfection. And the fact that you have a four-player version of it, I think that every game night should start with at least a round or two of Stellar Armada if you have the means. Because it gets you in that mindset.
It's got a permanent place in my extra special game bag, because it's so tiny. It fits in a little, you know, side pocket, and it's fantastic. And I can fit both packs because it's a smaller card pack in there. Because it played so quick, you're right. Like, it was great as a filler game or as a warm-up game, because as we were waiting for people to arrive, Sean, to game night, you know, get in a couple rounds of this and really get a feel for the game. Sorry.
See, it's okay. Well, no, but I walked in to Devin's house and I saw you guys were finishing that up and putting it away. That way we could play the review game we're going to be talking about shortly. But I was like, you guys were putting little cards away. I was like, oh, what's this game? Okay, I guess I won't play that one. That's fine. No big deal. But
I will definitely be happy to introduce you to this game. It was really
okay.
Fun.
Cool. Is it just going to be like the new love letter? Like, oh man, we got 10 minutes to kill. What are we going to do? Let's just do this. Stellar Armada. Let's rock and roll.
If I can find games to replace Love Letter, I'll be cool with it. I've thoroughly played out on Love Letter. So
yeah, it was just when you only have a couple of minutes, just an easy thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, the only complaint I have is the pieces are so small, they could be easily lost. And somebody else pointed this out on Twitter, and I felt it was unfair, but also they didn't realize what this game was and its history. And, you know, I saw Jerison Baines, the designer, you know, respond back to them explaining why he did this. The back of the ship cards is where the instructions are. So if you only have one copy of the game and you're just playing two players, you have no reference sheet because it's face down. You can't read it. I have two copies of the game, so I could easily, if we were only playing with two or three players, have a copy available to reference the rules. Rules aren't complicated, but sometimes we had some questions on things as we were learning it, and we wanted to go back to those. Also, it was printed really, really tiny. I would have liked an extra card with the rules on there, but I completely understand, given, you know, the constraints that went into designing this game, why it was done the way it was done. Also, he made the rules available online, so I could just download them on my phone and have them at all times, so not a big deal.
Mm. Well, yeah, nice.
That's Stellar Armada. It's designed by Jerison Baines. I don't think he has a company name. At least there wasn't one printed on the box. He just has Stellar Armada on there. And if you go back to our Spotlight episode, you can hear all about the development of the game and some of his future ideas of where he could go from there.
I like that. I like that a lot, Zach. The only thing I don't like about your little review of Stellar Armada is that you've now turned the show into a choose-your-own-adventure novel. So if you'd like to hear about my experience with a Kickstarter game this month, please turn to page 79. If you'd like to hear about my replacement for Love Letter, please turn to page 57.
Let's go to 79.
All right, so the Kickstarter that we've really been looking forward to, I've been taking the time to drive up to Manchester, Connecticut to hang out with friends of the show, TJ and Kate. And Kate backed a game on Kickstarter, and she was extremely excited to play it. And it finally came this month as well, because it just seems like July is Kickstarter board game month, right? Is that just us that experienced that, or like does that seem like the whole internet went through that?
I mean, I think I've received 5 so far this month in the mail, so it's very possible.
Holy,
yeah. So she received Bears vs. Babies, which is she had Kickstarter, and she was super excited for it. So I made that 90-minute drive up there to play it, knowing nothing about it. And I unfortunately have to say, it's kind of a garbage game. And I feel sort of bad saying that. But like, if you look at the game, it has this beautiful fuzzy box. And the concept behind it is beautiful. You're building monsters, aka bears, in order to fight armies of babies. But it feels like a game that really did not have the necessary playtesting for it to go out into the world for people to experience.
Oh, wow. It's literally the same art from Exploding Kittens.
It's Alan Lee and Shane Small. Exploding Kittens was their first effort, which is still like the most popular Kickstarter board game ever. It made over $8 million. This one made, I think, $3.5 million. And I honestly feel it's one of those games that like it sold on the successes of its predecessor and not the game itself. The fact that at any time you can choose to provoke the babies is one of the biggest problems with the game, because unlike most of these games, or maybe like all of these games, I don't know, I don't really have a lot of experience with it. When you provoke, everybody who can fight battles the babies, and the babies come in 3 varieties: land, sea, and sky.
Naturally.
And if I'm
looking to say, it makes sense.
Right. And if I'm looking at the table, right, and let's just pretend that we're playing Bears versus Babies right now. Sean has out an air card or a sky card. Zach has out a sky card. And then it comes to my turn, and I see that the sky pile of babies is quite large. Like, there's like 3-4 cards there. I can choose, rather than drawing or playing my own cards, to provoke that army. You guys will have to fight it. Win or lose, your monsters die. The only difference is if you end up losing, all of the victory points that the baby army represents are then removed from the game. So,
wow.
I don't know. Like they don't go back to still be an army. It's not like a way to like see what you're fighting and see what you need to build towards. at the end of any combat phase in Bears versus Babies, everything is removed from the table and put into the discard pile.
So
now it does, yeah.
So basically, you build Frankenstein monsters that they call bears for some reason.
Even though they're everything.
They're everything. I mean, I see a shark with a chainsaw and a lobster claw for a hand while wearing a business suit and what I assume are dancing turkey legs. I don't know. And it's basically the most cards you have versus the amount of cards of that baby type on the table. That's how it's determined.
That's another thing that has been changed from it. I didn't realize that like there was so much on it. So clearly some playtest went into it. So
he's a water man.
Yes, that's the water on there. So he's fighting the water army. All heads are worth 2 power points. Like they have a strength of 2. Bodies can have a strength of either 1 or 2. And the difference being that a body with a strength of 1 can have arms added to it and legs. Whereas a strength of 2 body, that's it. It's just head and body. And then the legs, I don't have confirmation on this because I never got any legs in the 2 games that I played. But I believe that they add another 1 strength point in addition to the 1 strength point that either of the arms can add. So, like, it kind of is the card count, like you said. Like, there's 5 cards there. But this particular beast, based on my memory, would have a strength of 6. Whereas the baby card, you see how the Portuguese Mano baby has a 1 there?
Yeah.
The great white baby has nothing. So the strength of the baby army would be 1 versus the strength of your monster, your bear, of 6. So you would win that fight. You would collect those, but you'd only have the 1 victory point that is on the Portuguese Mano baby. And then your monster that you have been working to build goes into the discard pile. Is gone, even though you won.
I mean, I guess I kind of get it because of the way that kittens works. You're constantly discarding your cards because you're trying to get the bombs to end the game. So I kind of get it, but at the same time, it's if you're spending all this time to build the thing, why does it go away so quickly? But I didn't mean to interrupt you, Zach. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just gonna say this looks like an incredibly over complicated, simple game. Like, Exploding Kittens is as dumb as it is, it's stupid fun would be a way to explain it. I mean, it's fun for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, however long it takes to do a round. I've played it. It's nothing deep by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, we had a couple laughs while we went through it, and then we were done with it. I don't think we've ever opened it up again. My nephew bought a copy of it. I have no desire to try it again, but I can just say, yeah, I tried Exploding Kittens. We had a laugh, and that was it. It's kind of like playing Cards Against Humanity. Like, you know, once you've gone through the deck, you know everything in there, and it's not as funny anymore. You need more cards to make it funny. This looks like it's adding extra complications to try to make it look like a more strategic game, but really it's just comparing strength. Like, that's all it is. It's a game of war.
Right. And the biggest issue with that is the fact that all of the heads are worth 2 strength. So it's not like I have a shark head that's worth 3 strength in water against like a manatee head, which is only 1 strength in water. As long as I get a water head, it goes down. It's worth 2 strength. Hmm. Now, there are the bear heads, which is why I believe they call the monsters bears, that are always worth 3 and they can fight on the land, sea, or sky. But there's only 4 of them in the game, and they're given to the players at the beginning of the turn. So very early, they get used because it's the only thing that you can play, and then they get discarded. Now, there is a dumpster dive-like mechanic where you can go through the discard pile and bring back any card from there, but that also takes up your whole turn. So, like, instead of getting the 4 actions if there's 2 players, the 3 if there's 3, or the 2 if there's 4 players, you only get that 1 action, which is to draw that card back. So, like, it's high risk for kind of a low reward because you don't know when you're going to be able to get it out. And even if you do get it out, because people can provoke at any, like, slight issue, there you go.
So this isn't cooperative then?
No, no, no. Everybody plays for themselves.
Okay, and what is the end game?
The end game is to be the person who defeated the most babies, because the strength of the baby armies that you have defeated represents the amount of victory points that you have.
Okay. And do you just go through the deck of babies and then you're done, or?
As soon as, it's a draw game, right? The basic actions are draw or play. And you, like I said, you have 4, 3, or 2, depending on the number of players. And you draw, and if you draw a baby, it goes face down into whatever pile it came from. If you draw a monster card or a torso card, like a body part card, and then there are like special modifiers, which again, all do the same modifications. There's no variety in this game.
No.
That's the problem. Like you talk about, they're trying to make it strategic, and like you look at the Kickstarter page, it does, well, actually you look at the Kickstarter page, it was just number of cards versus number of cards. So like that's even less strategic than it seemed like they were trying to make it. But then when all of the heads are the same value and all of the tools that you can use give you an extra action, there's no variety there. It's just different things to look at and to like laugh at one time and then get back to the game.
Well, I'm going to make sure that if that is on the agenda on a game night, I will be working next time you invite me over to play with them.
I got to tell you, I mean, that's the thing. Like, maybe it was like we didn't understand the game or anything like that, but we ended up playing through 3 rounds of the game, going from 4 players to 3 players. Like, we went from high to low to see if maybe too many cooks in the kitchen was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't make it any better. I honestly... Like, Kate was so disappointed because she had been looking forward to it for so long, and it didn't work out for her in any way, shape, or form.
That is one of the biggest disappointments, especially with Kickstarter, because you back it and then you don't get that game for, you know, a year. Like, the games that I've received this month, I backed over, you know, probably over a year ago or close to a year ago. So, you know, I have high expectations for a lot of them. You know, Tiny Epic Quest just came in, and I'm really excited to play this game. And if it's bad, I'm going to be really upset. I don't think it's going to be bad. but, you know, I completely understand. It stinks when that happens. I've had a few games that come in. You know, Loop Inc. is the one I always bring up. We never even reviewed it because... it just didn't sit well, and I felt really bad bringing it out. And I do want to give that game another try. I know I keep saying that, but it's just once you have a bad experience with it, I think with Kickstarter, you feel even more remorse for it, probably. You know, that buyer's remorse can come in when you first get an item, but yeah, I feel bad for Kate on this one.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything about from anyone on the game. Like, because I wanted to see if we were an isolated incident or if reviews were trending towards the negative for the game. And I haven't seen anything out there. So I don't even know how the rest of the world feels about this particular game. But I definitely feel for her because, like, I could see that palpable disappointment on her face.
I almost want to try it just so I can be 100% sure that, you know, so we could write a review on it. But I don't know. I don't like to review negatively. I like to, you know, I'm going to talk about things that were fun for me so I can recommend them. You know, if I didn't like something, I don't want to talk about it. So, all right.
I get that. World doesn't need more negativity, Zachary.
Yeah. All right, Sean, what have you been... Oh, you haven't been playing anything.
Whoa. First of all, I've been playing stuff, but I've been playing stuff that I've talked about a good 7,000 to 10,000 times. Basically, Jackbox Party Pack. I mean, I've been playing all 3 of those a lot. Now that Jackbox 3 is on the Switch, that's really convenient too. I like that. That's a neat thing to get that on there as well. And then Risk, because Risk, I just always play Risk. Whenever Keith and I hang out, I beat him for the first time in a couple of years. That felt really good.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah, well, because he always like tricks everybody else into thinking that like I'm the one who's going to screw everybody over. I'm the one laying all these traps, but really it's him doing it. And if somehow he convinces everybody, it's got to be because he's a police officer. He's just got that magic mouth talking. But yeah, so there was that. I beat him. I beat him because it was just the 2 of us and then 3 computers. So it was virtual Risk. So I won.
So he couldn't convince the computer that you were the one laying the traps.
Exactly. So I was really psyched about that. And that's what I got.
Nice. All right.
Heck yeah.
Well, next up for me, I got to play a game. I picked this up at Target on clearance. It was The Game of 49 from Breaking Games. And it's an abstract game. And when you look at this game, you think of it as like bingo on steroids, because you have a board with a grid on it with all numbered squares all the way from 1 to 49. Go figure. You're given these little tiddlywinks that are slightly clear of different colors, so each player has their own color, and there is paper money. And every player starts off with $49 of the paper money, and you have a deck of cards that you will reveal the top card, and it will have a number on it. And that number indicates which space you are going to be bidding on. So everybody starts bidding on, you know, say it's number 27. And, you know, you start saying, okay, I'm going to start the bidding at $2. And then the next player gets to say, well, I'll bid $3. And then the next person bids $5. And the next person passes. And you just keep going around until everybody passes and somebody wins the bid. And the idea is that you are trying to get four spaces in a row on this board. And it gets... It sounds like a very simple and kind of a boring game, but there are some cool aspects to it where if you play the 49 card, for example, if that comes up, that is the only space in the board that can switch places. You know, it will come up four times, I believe, in the deck, and it goes up for bidding each time. So if you're counting on the 49 space to create your four in a row, you want to hold on to that. But other people also know that, so they're going to try to bid you up and make you waste all your money. There are also periodically spaces that will come up that will let you choose anything on the outer grid or anything on the inner rim or something like that. So you can choose a lot of different spaces. You have a lot of different spaces to choose from if you win that. And there are periodic payouts based on how many spaces you have so that you can get some of your money back. But I found the strategy in the game is in the bidding. Like, that is really fun because you know you want that space, or you know somebody else wants that space, and you're going to bid them up. I was having endless fun bidding up my nephew and making him waste all his money on a completely useless space because, you know, he didn't quite understand the game. I guess I took advantage of him. But it was still pretty fun, you know, and I was playing with my mother and my two nephews, and we were having a blast just, you know, bidding each other up, seeing who could waste all their money, you know, laughing about, you know, because somebody else had all the money and then, you know, they were able to buy whatever spaces they want, you know, just driving that bid just enough so that, you know, you drive them up to all of their money and then let them have it, you know, when they only have $29 left and now they're down to $0. So, you know, you can, you know, beat them on any bid going forward until they get their money back. It was a really fun game. I wrote a review on it on the website if you want to check it out, but you know, and there's some pictures on there too, so you can get an idea of it. Very, very low production quality, I feel. But because of the cost of the game, even at full price, I think it's only $20, you're getting a lot of fun packed into that box. And I enjoyed it. Game of 49 is a big thumbs up.
The game sounds pretty cool. And I'm looking at the review of it on BoardGameGeek.com right now. Or I guess these aren't really like actual full-on reviews. Oh, actually, yeah, there are a bunch posted, but yeah, it looks cool. I like. It sounds neat, and I had more thoughts until all those words just happened.
You know, it definitely sounds like the next time we do have a game night, I would ask that you do bring it along, because it does seem like that kind of game that I would enjoy. I like bidding and bluffing.
That's all it is. I mean, it's dead simple. You know, the game itself. I mean, I was not impressed when I opened the box. I'll be quite honest with you. I was like, all right, I feel like I wasted, you know, some money here. But then we started playing it, and it was really fun. I mean, we were just having a blast with these simple components. It didn't, you know, it proved to me that you do not need, you know, these blinged out miniatures and, you know, metal coins and all this other stuff to have fun. It reminded me that a game can be fun even if it's abstract. And abstract games have always deterred me, you know, when you look at, you know, those kinds of games. It's just like, well, what is that? What does it mean? You know, there's no theme here. There's nothing. Well, you know what? The fun was just in the players. And maybe it was because of the mix that I had. I don't know. I'll try it again with more people because, one, it wasn't that expensive and I have it and now I can play it with anybody. But paper money was a little off-putting, but it was still, it was a really fun experience.
I mean, I don't like I don't like paper money either. I only like credit cards. I don't like carrying cash with me.
I don't like paper money in games because it gets all crinkled and mixed up and it's hard to handle. I'd rather have, you know, cardboard chips or, you know, plastic money or, you know, something that's more substantial than that.
No, I know. I'm just picking a stupid statement. But yeah, I obviously, like, yo, just give me nothing but credit cards and I play these games. I don't even know what I'm saying right now. I'm sorry.
I don't know either.
Been going around. So since we're talking about a game of bluffing and bidding, we'll turn to page 57 now, and I'll talk about Coup, which I believe is the game that can unseat Love Letter, because it has just as much intrigue and lying as a game of Love Letter does, but it's actually a lot of fun. And what Coup is, it's a card game, very similar to Love Letter. And at the beginning of the game, you are dealt out two cards, and those cards represent one of seven professions. And some of the professions are like assassin or ambassador or sheriff, Contessa, and each one of those comes with a magic power that you're able to do. Like, you can do that power. Now, the thing is, those cards remain face down. So if each of us get our cards, right, I can say that I have a Duke card, which allows me to take three money from the pile. Now, I'm going to say I have the Duke card, take that three money. But Sean, if you have two Duke cards and you know that there's only one other Duke card in the pile, when Zach says, I too have the Duke and pulls those three, you can accuse him of lying. And if he is lying, he cannot show you that he has the Duke card. He has to kill one of his two people that he has in, that he's in control of. And if he is not lying, you would have to kill one of the two cards that you're in control of. And it's completely your choice. So play goes around in circles until you're the last person with a living character card. Now, the
dark.
Fun part about this, it's pretty dark.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, like, you take that money, because once you have seven pieces of currency, you're able to coup, which is the title of the game, and that allows you to instantly remove a character card from the game from any other player. So, like, in addition to, like, making sure that every move that people are doing is on the up and up, you're also trying to collect those coins and identify who, if they're telling the truth or if they're the best liar there, is the biggest threat so that you can eliminate them and make it easier for you to win.
I've never actually played Coup, but that description makes me want to try it.
Well, I was going to say, so I know that I had played Coup in the past because my brother, who's my roommate, is obsessed with it. He loves it. And our other old roommate always refused to play it because I don't know why. He didn't like it for whatever reason. But now that I have this refresher course on exactly what Coup is, it is a lot of fun to play because it's like you're just like messing with one another. And if obviously if you're playing with a lot of people who you really, really know, you can kind of like, I don't want to say tell their tells, but really you can tell when someone's kind of messing with you, BSing with you or whatever, versus if you're playing with strangers or people who you're not super close with, it's like, oh man, I don't know what that is. So it's when you have like a nice mix of people who you see all the time versus people who maybe you don't always play games with or don't always see, it does get to be pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. And especially going off of what Sean just said, we do all have our tells, and hopefully you know your own tells so you can also weaponize those against your friends that you often play board games with.
Mm.
Like, oh yeah, I'm going to Duke. And then they call you out on that. Yeah, I got the Duke. You're out. I'm still
playing the lawn con on that because I'm a terrible liar when it comes to games, and everybody always calls me out. So, but I love playing those kinds of games where you got to bluff, even though I'm bad at it.
Well, what about the when we were playing Resistance? It's like, all right, everybody, like traitors, open your eyes. Okay.
Oh, yes, your brother did that. That was amazing.
With my brother.
Oh, man. Oh, that was one of my funniest moments.
Yeah, that was amazing.
We should have kept that game going. We shouldn't have stopped and restarted like we did. It would have been great.
Yeah. Well, because he ended up being a traitor again anyways, I think.
With me, again. We were both the traitor on that. I'm like, how am I going to deal with this like, when I'm locked eyes
like,
with him?
Jeez, it's all going downhill.
I'm not comfortable with this partnership. No. Oh, that was fun.
But Koo, it's definitely one that, like, it's super cheap. I'll probably get it to have it in my house because it's one of those games that, like, right now I'm in love with, like I was with Love Letter. So we'll definitely get a chance to try it out.
Yeah, I've seen that game at Target, at Walmart, a bunch of places. It's easy to come by. I never got around to trying it. It's one of those games that I think because I was at the time, you know, I thought Love Letter was great and I didn't need another one to fill that niche. And now I'm sick of Love Letter, and I'm finding other games to fill that niche, and I've just never got around to Koo. But if you do pick up a copy, Devin, I will be willing to try it.
And I'm going to Koo you so hard.
All right,
seven
then.
Coins.
I mean, I have Koo. I could, but...
Oh, then I don't need to buy it. Sean, just bring Koo to the next game night.
Yeah, do that. Oh,
I just need to remember to go to my actual house and get a thing, because I'm never there.
All right. Well, next up for me, I got to play a game called Jungle Speed. Jungle Speed is an older game. My cousin and her fiancé had come over and brought it over for a game night. And he introduced this to me as... It sounded a little boring, but, you know, once we got it going, this game is... The only way I can say it is it will test every relationship you are in at that table. Basically, what happens is there's a big deck of these square cards, and they have all these different icons on them, all these different graphics. They have you know, designs of different colors and stuff like that. And everybody gets the deck of cards filtered out to them evenly, so everybody has the same number of cards in their stack. And what you do is, you know, on your turn, you're flipping over a card and putting it down in front of you. That's it. In the middle of the table, between all the players, is a little totem. It's a wooden stick, basically. And as you flip over these cards, you're looking at what everybody else has played. And the main rule is if anybody has a pattern that matches yours, you and that person have to immediately try to grab the totem in the middle of the table. And whoever grabs it first... they give all of their cards to the person who failed. There are cards that make everybody at the table have to grab it once. There are cards that make everybody have to flip over cards at the same time. And there are cards that make it so that you're no longer trying to match patterns. You're trying to match colors, which can really mess with your when you're looking at the table and trying to keep track of everything. There's no rules about grabbing the totem. Whoever ends up with it in their hand and nobody else is touching it is the rule. So there's a lot of fighting over it. I played this game with Vanessa and she literally tried to hip throw me across the room trying to get the totem out of my hand. It was pretty bad. She had dragged me off the table and we're fighting across the kitchen. My cousin is laughing her butt off, you know, watching this, and we're just dying trying to get the totem out of each other's hand. Finally, I let go because I didn't feel like being thrown. She's a kickboxer. I don't feel like dealing with that. But then a few minutes later, it happened again, and this time I held on to it. I managed to pry her fingers off of the stick and hold on to it. So it gets a little violent, but it was a really, really fun game. Everybody was laughing. I can't imagine playing it more than once and in a night because you get really tired. but it plays up to a ridiculous amount of people, too. I think Mike had said 10 people could play it at a time, which I imagine trying to lunge at this thing could get extremely violent. But that's Jungle Speed, if anyone's ever interested in playing that one. A lot of fun for a big group.
I want to say, because when I'm looking at the Wikipedia and a couple of the other like random review sites, it's like players, it's like two or more. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, okay. So just however many people you want trying to just grab this totem and punch each other in the face.
We played it with four. I mean, I can't imagine the chaos of playing it with more. It was insane. Mm.
That seems cool, though. Apparently, they made apparently there was a Wii version of the game, like on regular old Wii.
Interesting. I don't even know how that would work.
Yeah, a Jungle Speed video game was developed by Playful Entertainment and Next Level Games and was released on the Nintendo Wii WiiWare service in North America on January 12, 2009 and in PAL regions on March 13, 2009. playable up to 8 players, with 2 players are able to share a one Wii remote and nunchuck combination.
That could be dangerous. And expensive when you rip the nunchuck off of the Wiimote.
Yeah, right? It's like, that's mine! You're just like, whoa, okay, we're supposed to be sharing. I mean, IGN gave it an 8. Must have been a pretty good game.
Oh, we'll have to check that out if anyone has a Wii still. Right. My mother and my mother-in-law both have Wiis, actually. I'll see if I can download it and try it.
I think I've had one in my trunk for like 2 years that I was going to give to you when we first started doing the podcast. And then it just never happened, and it's still in my trunk, I think.
Oh, well, if you find it, let me know.
Okay, well.
Mine is hooked up to the TV, so we could play that.
Well, that's Jungle Speed. Just wear pads when you play, you know, because you might get hurt.
Wear boxing gloves, wear mouth guards.
I feel don't like make boxing gloves, that's not fun. It needs to be bare knuckle, man, and that's what makes the jungle.
Well, but there's no boxing gloves also make it difficult to grab the totem because you're just going to punch it away. Oh, if you grab the totem when it's not supposed to be grabbed, like if you mess up, you have to take all the cards on the table, by the way. And I probably forgot to mention the objective is to get rid of your cards. Really, the fun of the game is fighting over the stick, basically, but it was a lot of fun.
That's I was afraid awesome. It might be branding as a punishment for taking the totem, as you discuss Fight Club, the board game. So that's good to know. I just have to take cards.
That's going to be the advanced version.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, you can have a house rule, right?
Oh, you messed up?
You will wear your shame forever.
Here comes the hot iron. All right. What's up next for you, Devin?
At the risk of alienating Sean... we played a game called Scythe.
Yes, which... we did.
And actually, I think you'd enjoy it, Sean. I didn't realize how into Risk you were until just this evening.
Oh, I love Risk. I'm looking up Scythe right now. Do tell.
So Scythe is it's resource collecting. It's troop placement. It's a huge game. And like most modern board games, it also seems like the quest for more money. Because it has every type of bonus DLC type purchase you can buy. The game board itself is three parts. It's like three foldouts. And printed on one side is the full game board. But if you flip it over, it's enlarged. And you can actually purchase an add-on that can be slid against it to make it the entire length of a table. So Scythe, it's a money sink, but it's also a lot of fun. I don't think Zach would disagree with me on either of those.
I would not. Like... I don't know if I ever get a copy, and believe me, I'm trying my darndest not to at the moment because I really enjoyed the game. I don't think I would bling it out to the degree that the version that we played was blinged out. But yes, I agree. Do go on.
And what Scythe is, it's a post-apocalyptic, like, it's almost like neo-apocalyptic world where the remaining factions are all warring for the land that is still out there. And they're all sort of like slant references to existing groups. Like, there's your Vikings, so like Norwegians, the French, the Germans, the Russians, and the English. So you have all of those factions, but it's cool because it's also like futuristic. So they've made interesting changes to it. Right now, I'm still mad at Zach. Like, it's hard for me to talk about Scythe because Zach won. And Zach won because he got the faction that, as I read the rules of the game, was like, oh, so if you play this faction, you win. Do you want to elaborate, you Saxon bastard?
Basically, I played black. I don't remember the name of the faction.
Saxony. That's why I called you a Saxon. Yeah.
That's right. I don't want to say they were broken, but they were definitely... They were maybe borderline OP. I'm not going to completely commit to that statement until I get to play some of the other factions and get a feel for it. But I did like that there are variable player power, so each faction... definitely played differently. Like TJ was playing the blue faction, and right out of the bat I thought that they were going to be a big threat because the map, you are kind of all separated by water, and you can't cross it until you have the ability to do so. But his faction could cross the water if he wanted to right away. So I thought he was going to be able to spread out on the board, and he was going to be a bigger threat. And then you find different ways to get around that. My faction, their powers were in itself, they lended to, I guess, more dastardly deeds in the game. Like, whenever a story element card came up and offered a good choice or a bad choice or a middle ground, the bad choice was always best for me. And it was a lot of fun and very beneficial. Basically, I was allowed to... everybody was restricted in victory points for the number of attacks they did, and I forget what the other one was. The number of...
The objective of the game is to place 6 stars.
Yes, those.
Which mean accomplishments. And the Saxony faction, they are not limited in where they how they can earn those stars of victory. Anything is a victory to a Saxon. So if they win 6 combats, they win because they won those 6 combats.
Well, they don't necessarily win.
When usually it's
win.
Limited... Well, no. But if you went, if you won 6 combats, you could place all 6 of your stars and win the game.
Well,
so
that
if you're
just
focusing
triggers
on combat,
the end game, though.
That's true. It does just trigger the end game. That is correct. But part of the end game is counting up each of those stars that you've placed.
Yes.
And if you've been able to place all 6, it's like 18 additional victory points.
I feel like you just sound like an awfully gigantic sore loser right now, Devin.
No, I'm not trying to say that. No, it's not that at all. I actually think it's an interesting... First of all, it was all of our first time playing the game. So none of us were really... I was, like, iffy on some of the powers that my own faction had. And I feel like it was the same across the board. In fact, I know it was the same across the board because Policare, one of the guys we were playing with, after the game, he's like, there's stuff I should have been doing that I just completely forgot to do because I was not familiar with the game. And I was in the exact same boat as him. And I'm not trying to sound like a sore loser. I like the game. I do enjoy that. But the fact that everybody else, if they win, can only win up to 2 combats to place those stars, having it be like, I can be all combat driven, that does give an advantage. And it's the same as everybody else can choose 1 of 2 objectives that they're assigned before the game begins for to place a star on your objective path. And the Saxons can do it. They can complete both objectives. So they're given, like he said, it's not OP and it's probably not the most powerful one out there, but just looking at it in a game where everybody is inexperienced, it gives you a pretty big advantage.
I would
say
so.
That's all I'm trying to say.
They definitely had, once I figured out the basic mechanics of what I wanted to do, the Saxons definitely had a very clear-cut path to victory, or at least to getting the stars out there so that I could end the game. And, I mean, when I eventually did place the 6th star and end the game, I actually didn't even realize I could do it. I was aiming to do, like, 2 other things. It was going to take another 2 or 3 more rounds to do those things. And then I realized, oh, I could just do this and end the game right now. And hopefully I have enough points. And I ended up having enough points to take victory. But it actually, the spread wasn't that bad.
As upset as I am, and as much as Sean said, I do kind of feel like a sore loser, I'm not going to lie. Because I was also given one of the expansion. There are 2 expansion factions as well. Because, like I said, money sink, bigger money pit than before. And I had read over the rules during the day because the rules had been sent over to me so that I could learn the game. And the faction that I was assigned was not part of those rules. So even though I thought I was going into the game prepared, that was not the case. Because I had all new things to learn.
You say assigned. So like, we really just sat down at the places. So it's not like we chose our factions. It was slightly randomized.
The stuff was already out for the purple faction, though.
Yes. And easily you could have taken the chair I was in, or I could have taken the chair that you sat in, and I would have ended up playing purple. So there you go.
Of the colors available, though, I wanted to be purple.
All right.
Blue and green had already been like taken,
and we had also
and red was yeah
thought
like,
about
it was
switching
fine.
To yellow or red, even though they weren't out. I would have liked to have played yellow because I usually play yellow, but I didn't want to put up a fuss and I just wanted to play the game. But
you wanted to win, Zach, is what it sounds
I
like.
I hadn't even read the power yet.
you're wearing a black shirt. I think it's fairly obvious you have committed to this faction in all other facets of your life.
I also have a black shirt that has a yellow meeple on it that says I play yellow. So, you know, there.
Not anymore, apparently.
It's inside
not
out.
Not when Scythe is on the table. No, it is good. It's a fun game. It's exciting. And I would like to, if I can coerce them to bring all of the various packages that are required to travel with Scythe down, Sean, I think you would really enjoy it if you're as into Risk as you are. Because it feels like next level Risk.
Yo, if you like this thing as much as you like this thing, you'll like this other thing.
I heard you like Risk, so I put a Risk board in your car so you can play Risk while you drive.
The ultimate game of world domination as I careen through through traffic, not through people.
I put magnets on the pieces, too, so that they won't be sliding around.
I appreciate that. It's a nice touch.
It's like those old little travel games that you used to have that had magnetic bombs. Did you guys ever have those?
Yeah, I did.
My sister and I had a Travel Monopoly Junior, and it had a little pop-o-matic in the middle for the dice so you didn't lose them. It was really cool.
Oh, that's cool. That's...
Probably
I had Travel Yahtzee.
All right. I really did enjoy Scythe, so, and I look forward to playing it again. I hope we get to take it to PAX Unplugged, because I want to try the other factions. Like, I think that should be the rule going forward, though. You can't play the same faction twice in a row.
I actually really like that. That's a perfect host rule for Scythe, and I will float that at the next host meeting.
There you go.
Of board games.
All right, so next up, I just found out about a Kickstarter that I wanted to show you guys. This is called Master of the Galaxy. It's a 4X game where you are exploring, expanding, exploiting, and exterminating. I'll get it right this time. What intrigued me about this is because I had already backed a Kickstarter previously that was a 4X game that I can't wait to try, Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. From Gameland Games, but this one popped up, and the reason it caught my eye is because I really love the game Orleans, which has a bag building mechanic in it, and so does this one. Basically, you are a faction exploring the galaxy, trying to pick up these resource cubes as you move along. And you're using those resource cubes and throwing them into the bag. You shake up the bag, and then you take them out, and that determines what you can do. And it's a really cool randomizing mechanic for the resources that you have available to you. There's, you know, special powers cards, there's all this other stuff, and it just looked so cool. So I wanted to give a shout-out to this Kickstarter and have you guys take a look at it, too.
It does look really cool.
Am I the only one who has Queen stuck in my head right now?
Probably.
I just want to check. We are the masters of the galaxy. I know it's universe in Highlander, but like, come on. Queen, guys.
When you said that, I was just like, that's not the lyric. But then I realized what you were doing. You doing a bit, and it completely flew over my head.
Yes. The game itself.
That's in space.
I mean,
Please.
You win by either eliminating one of your opponents. So there's no player elimination where the game continues until everybody's gone. It's just one of them gone. You build 9 space bases. So you establish your dominance.
9 space bases.
Or you achieve dominance in diplomacy, economics, or science. It just looks really, really cool. I'm excited to see further stuff from this. Yeah.
So basically, you can either win by murdering, by performing perfect alliteration, or by playing Civilization.
Yeah. Basically.
Cool.
You establish dominance. looking at these space bases too, the miniatures for them, it looks like you're the race of aliens from Stargate, because you got your little pyramid there. You got some generic looking space station, and then you got the Technodrome. So that's pretty cool. You're either from Dimension X, you're from Stargate, or you're from Tatooine. I like it.
Yeah.
I like that Tatooine is it really just bringing it all together. What appeals to me looking at this Kickstarter page is that it plays in under 2 hours. Because it looks like a lot of game. And
there's a lot going on the board.
And that's intimidating, but, like, that's great. I like that, like, it promises that'll be short. Because, I mean, with us, it'll probably still be, like, 2.5 to 3 hours that first time. But still, you could get in another game after that.
Absolutely. That's always been what's deterred me from trying 4X games is the length of time most of them take up. I know Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea, it's supposed to be around that two-hour mark. This one is boasting 60-plus minutes, so, you know, it could go a lot longer, but it also could end pretty quickly. So, And just because it's got that bag-building mechanic that I love from Orleans, I definitely want to try this game. It looks like they still have 15 days to go, and they're definitely backed. So if anybody's interested in this game from Ares Games, check it out. Masters of the Galaxy on Kickstarter right now.
Before we move on, in case there are any listeners who don't know what a 4X game is, can you explain that to them?
Well, I kind of did at the beginning, but I'll do it again. It is the four X's are explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate. So
it's really like four E's.
But it sounds cooler when you say 4X, right?
All right, I just wanted to make sure. You know, I was the one. It was for me. I wanted to understand why it was called a 4X game.
Because
I'm
when
big
you pronounce
enough to
those words,
that.
It starts with X, 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 and X. Like, EX,
I thought it
EX.
Might involve moonshine. I just wanted to make sure.
When I first got into the hobby and I saw someone write 4X game, I really thought they said four times game. Like, that's
When you were scrolling through the Kickstarter here, I was like, four times the board game? Like,
four
times the board game.
I thought it had four boards. I thought it had four boards.
That would be cool.
I'm not ashamed.
Yeah.
Thank you for elaborating, engaging, entertaining, and explaining. Four E's.
There you go. All right. So that being said about the Kickstarter, I also wanted to come up and give a little bit of an announcement. In the month of September, we are planning for the first time a kind of a crossover event that's going to be happening with a couple other podcasts. The Fanholes podcast has graciously agreed to do a crossover, as well as the Animated Indulgence podcast. These two shows, Fanholes is basically about just anything pop culture. These guys are really funny. They tackle all sorts of stuff. They're Transformers fans. They're just into everything. And they'll review anything. And they have a lot of different spin-off shows on their network. One of their members who actually lives local to us, Mike, he will be joining us for a episode of Bored with Friends, and we'll be joining them to review what they would like to talk about on their show, The Fanholes. I don't know quite if Animated Indulgence is going to be joining us, but they will be joining us on Fanholes, and we might be joining them on Animated Indulgence to talk about cartoons. The whole month is going to be dedicated to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So we'll be reviewing the TMNT Shadows of the Past board game. But it's going to be a lot of fun. That's coming up in the month of September. And I kind of wanted to give out a shout out to them because they've been pretty supportive of us. And, you know, I like chatting with them on Twitter. And like I said, Mike is local and he'll be joining us on the show.
Exciting stuff. I'm actually very disappointed that in my whole recording area, I have nothing Ninja Turtle, considering how much Ninja Turtle memorabilia
that
I actually own.
Rather shocking from you.
Yeah.
You really have no Ninja Turtle stuff?
No Ninja Turtle stuff in my desk area. I think in the basement, there's a movie Raphael figure, but everything, all my Ninja Turtle stuff is upstairs in the shrine. So I'm going to have to move something down. Strange. Sorry. And it's exciting. I'm excited that we're talking about TMNT because I know a lot.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I also wanted to give out a shout out to a Twitter user at Scott Holy. He gave us a shout out for last episode where Vanessa and I were talking about where we were talking about escape rooms and the experiences that we had in them. And he was able to go to one of the rooms that's local in Rhode Island and check it out. And he gave us a shout out there. So I thought that was pretty cool. So I wanted to thank Scott Holy for bringing that up.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
I was going to try to look him up right now and be like, yo, Scott, You the dude, man.
Pretty cool guy. He's already invited us out to a couple game nights. Unfortunately, I was working and wasn't able to go. But
you're the man now, dog.
It's really nice to get feedback from listeners. So thank you, Scott. And on that note, let's go over to the rules breakdown of our review game today, Monopoly Gamer. Monopoly Gamer is a roll and move game. Surprise. For 2 to 4 players, published in 2017 by Hasbro. The goal of the game is to have the most points at the end after the final boss is defeated. In Monopoly Gamer, players control popular characters from Nintendo games like Mario, Princess Peach, and Donkey Kong. Each character has unique special abilities that allow them to bend the rules of the game. Players will move their pawns around the board, activating special spaces, buying property, and picking up coins along the way. On a player's turn, they roll 2 dice. One for movement, and one for special actions. The active player can then choose which die to activate first. The action die has different special abilities on it. It can give you coins, make other players drop coins with turtle shells, or make everyone drop a coin with the POW symbol. If players must drop coins, they leave them on the board for another player to pick up as they move along. Different spaces activate different abilities. Star spaces, for example, trigger a player's special power, like Yoshi collecting all the coins currently on the board when he lands on this space. Warp tubes send you to the next consecutive tube, thwomps make you lose coins, and free parking does, well, nothing, as it should. If you land on a property, the active player may buy it. If they choose not to, the property goes up for auction, and all players may participate, with the property going to the highest bidder. Anytime a player lands on that property, that player will then pay the owner rent in coins. Each time a player passes go, they collect 2 coins, flip over a boss card. They are then given the chance to engage in a boss battle. To participate, the player will pay the entry fee, then roll the movement die to try to defeat the boss. If they fail the roll, the next player in turn order may participate or pass. The battle continues until all players pass or the boss is defeated. If they are defeated, the winning player adds the boss card to their points. If not, the boss gets away and the card is discarded. The game ends when all the boss cards are defeated or discarded. Points are then added up for coins, properties, and bosses. The player with the highest score wins. Let's get back to the rest of the friends and see what we thought of Monopoly Gamer. And we're back talking about Monopoly Gamer from Hasbro. Oh, yeah. We got a Hasbro game on the show. All right.
Local, small, local business. Don't know if anybody's really ever heard of them before. Local to Pawtucket, Rhode Island. It's really, really, I'm glad we could, a nicely homebrewed game from Rhode Island. I really appreciate that we took time to take the time to do that.
They are definitely local to us, and I can honestly say I've supported Hasbro pretty much my entire life as being a Transformer fan. But Monopoly Gamer, I heard about this a month or two ago, and, you know, you just any other version of Monopoly, you tend to brush it off. But once I started to see what it was more about, and also after coming off of the experience that we had with Star Wars Risk and how much I liked it, I was willing to give it a shot. And, you know, thankfully, your sister, Devin, was able to obtain a copy for us to try out. And so we got the cool GameStop limited edition version with the plastic coins and all that fun stuff. And I was pleasantly surprised by this game. I mean, you open it up, the production in the box was impressive for a Hasbro mass market game. It's got this cool, you know, lid that you open up, and everything's got all the little figurines look beautiful. They're nicely painted. They're really cool sculpts. You know exactly who everybody is, and it's all Mario and Nintendo characters. I was impressed. I don't know about you guys.
I mean, it was basically, when we were looking at all the pieces and stuff, it was basically Super Smash Brothers, Mario Party, Monopoly. So, you know, it was all the traditional Mario folks, and along with, I was like Donkey and Diddy, and I was like, well, at this point, I guess they are kind of Mario characters. But
they're,
I was super impressed.
Part of the Nintendo universe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We just needed. Oh no, was Pikachu there?
No, Pikachu was not there, unfortunately.
Okay, so we were just missing Pikachu, then 47 Fire Emblem characters, and then we would have had Smash Brothers. But I mean, the game was very easy to pick up and play. It was a lot of fun. I liked, because initially, when I saw we were gonna play Nintendo Monopoly, I was like, oh, that's cool that it's Nintendo. Why are we playing Monopoly? I don't want to play Monopoly. This is gonna take 8 hours, and I'm gonna hate all of you. Only the second part was true at the end of it. I did hate all of you, but it was very, very fast. I was very surprised in how quickly the game went by and how things progress. But I really, really liked the game, despite the fact that you're all horribly mean to Yoshi, and all he wanted to do is have a couple properties and just make a good living for him and his other Yoshi friends. And you guys wouldn't let me have any money because Zach kept hurting my feelings and my wallet. And then Devin would be like, oh, I know how it is, man. It's pretty bad. But you know what, Devin? You had property. You never had to sell.
I did have property. You're very true. I never
it's
had
good to have land.
Mortgage. Any of... It's good to have land. But you beat a Koopa Kid before I did. I only beat Bowser Jr. I stopped the threat. But that wasn't worth as much as anything else.
Like, me and Lenny from Motorhead go way back. So when he popped up as a Koopa Kid, I took him down immediately. You know, he was like, yo, we're bros. Let's hang out. Let's have a great time. And then we did our thing. But other than that, I had nothing. And he was like 2 points.
Yeah, I know. It was. Yes, you're right, Sean. Sean, let me officially put on record an apology to you for being like, I feel you, bro. But I had no coins the whole time either. Zach is the monster. This is where the revolution begins, because you were Donkey Kong and you could hurt anybody for 3 coins. It didn't matter where we were. Donkey Kong.
And I was perpetually like right in front of you. So it was always me. Always me, which I understand strategically.
Donkey Kong's
power
affects everybody, okay? You know, I rolled the POW symbol, everybody drops 2 coins. I wasn't being malicious and attacking you specifically, Sean, okay? Just because you didn't have any coins when I rolled that POW symbol, that's not my fault.
I mean, I feel like it is because you kept rolling the POW, I had no coins. It was just a self-fulfilling prophecy of me getting poorer and poorer and you just wanting to keep the Dino Man down. And I don't really appreciate that, Zach.
All right, let's talk about the production of this game. So it comes with a certain amount of characters in the box, enough play for some choices when you want to pick who you want to be. I had picked Donkey Kong. Sean had picked Yoshi. Mike had joined us from the Fan Halls podcast, and... I forget who he played.
He was Bowser.
That's right. And Devin, who were you again?
I was Wario.
That's right. You
in the world again. Like DLC is real. It's reached board games, ladies and gentlemen. GameStop is carrying power-up packs for the Monopoly gamer, so you can buy additional characters. Now, I'm not a crazy person. I didn't like go out and have to catch them all. But when we purchased the Monopoly Gamer game, you did get one of those power packs for free. So I looked through the box, and there was only one of the character that I would want, and that is why I was able to play as Wario.
And that's what I wanted to touch on. I mean, the game is beautiful, like I said. The sculpts are nice, really impressive for Hasbro games. It comes with these cool plastic coins. Those power-up packs, though... I absolutely understand why they did it, and I absolutely understand why some people were mad about it, because they just wanted to get all of them at once, and it felt kind of like a cash grab. But at the same time, I'm a big fan of like those blind bag miniatures and blind bag like Lego figures and stuff like that. Like it's a fun kind of thing, and I know these are not blind bagged, but it's fun, you know, going to find those extra characters. Like, who else can I get for this game? And they each have their own unique powers, and you can kind of customize your set. I mean, yeah, you could go and get them all if you want to, but you don't have to. The only one that I didn't agree with, though, and maybe you guys will agree with me on this, is Luigi being left out.
That was weird.
That was just weird to me, yeah. Because why was he a separate bag? Why? Poor Luigi, he's always getting shafted, you know? I feel like any time I think of Mario and Nintendo, I think of, you know, Luigi as part of the set, not being a separate add-on. Just maybe that's just me.
And the person that you would replace is Donkey Kong.
Yes.
Because he's not original Mario Brothers. You put him in a blind bag, and then maybe we had more fun at the game, Sean, right?
Well, see, but I don't know I guess considering that the four you start with, one of them is DK. But I think the reason why Luigi was left out is because it's like, oh, man, Luigi's not here. And it's like, oh, you know, you can buy Luigi and Diddy and Boo and Koopa Troopa. And it's like, oh, I can buy Luigi. I was like, oh, I can get Luigi? Well, yeah, I got to have Luigi. And then it's like, well, I already bought Luigi. I might as well buy Diddy. And if I got Luigi and Diddy, then, like, why don't I have Wario yet?
That's
and
the like, other it's... one. Like, Diddy, you know, if I have Donkey Kong, I have to have Diddy Kong, you know?
So it's a very, it's very, pretty sneaky Nintendo.
I see what
pretty
you did there, Hasbro.
I see what you did. I got you. I got you.
But there's real paint application on these figures, Zach. Paint! Apparently Hasbro does know how to use it.
Yes, they do. And yeah, not just in some premium special edition of a lackluster toy. No, they did a good job with them, and I don't mind the booster packs. I mean, all joking aside, I thought it was pretty cool that they did that. Because it also allows them to expand the game. You know, if they want to add more characters later, if Nintendo gives them the license to do that or whatever, they can add more. And in the box itself, in that the insert, there are underneath this little advertisement that you can buy more. If you lift that up, there's slots for every single one of those extra characters. So I like that they made it so that you can fit them in the box and they fit nicely and they won't roll around or anything like that, just like the main characters that came with the base game. Now, talking about this box, I mean, this, like I said, is the special edition version. There are some differences between the regular edition and this one. That being, I don't believe Bowser comes with the regular edition.
What I'm trying to look up now.
He is actually, as we went through the boss battle, because, you know, to get through the game, there's no, you know, boxing everybody out and, you know, taking all their money. It's you just go around the board enough times and fight all the bosses, and once all the bosses are done, the game is over and you count up your points. The final boss in the special edition is Bowser Jr. The final boss in the regular edition is Bowser himself. So I don't know if Bowser is just limited to this box and you can't get him any other way, or if they'll make him available later in a booster pack or something like that. But if that disappoints people, then get to your local GameStop and see if you can get a copy. Or if
If you live in Rhode Island, you officially cannot. Because we had to go searching to find it. And then we wound up at another GameStop, because I guess that's just what we did with our Saturday night, was go to a bunch of GameStops. And the guy working there was like, you got the game? We had a rep from Hasbro in here being like, why don't you have the game available? And I had to be like, guy, I just work here. I don't know. And I'm like, thank you, clerk. Thank you for this insight. Hey,
why didn't you just say to the rep, because you didn't provide enough of them?
I know, right?
I mean, that would be my reaction.
Yo, use guys.
I did go to the GameStop near my place of employment, and they were just like, yeah, we didn't get anything. They didn't get the game. They didn't get the booster packs. So it's hard to find. But the base game, you know, looking at reviews of that one and pictures of it, there's not a whole heck of a lot different other than the coins are cardboard and, you know, it's missing Bowser. Other than that, it's pretty much the same thing. So let's talk about the gameplay itself. I mean, at its core, there are some aspects of Monopoly, but it's more... It feels like a dumbed-down version of Monopoly, but then they added in all this other neat stuff to make it fun. I'm not a huge fan of regular Monopoly. I've played it, you know, in my childhood. I don't think I ever completed a game, but we also played it wrong. Just like a lot
free
of
parking.
People do. Oh, yeah, free parking, all that nonsense. But this version, you know, eliminates all of that. The only way free parking gets coins is if you happen to be on it and someone, you know, hits the POW symbol or hits you with a turtle shell and you drop coins. And I love that aspect that you can drop coins wherever you go. And then there's this physical, representation of, like, in the Mario games where as you're moving along, you're picking up coins. And I thought that was so cool. It's just a really... neat, speedy version of Monopoly with aspects of Mario Party. Almost more Mario Party than Monopoly itself.
Well, I was gonna say there's a in Mario Party 8 on the Wii, there actually is a Monopoly-esque board where you can kind of buy properties. So it's sort of that, but instead of at the end of every round playing a mini game, it's when you go all the way around the board, you get to do a boss fight. So it really is Mario Party mixed with just a little, just enough Monopoly to like make it Monopoly.
And here's the thing. Also in my July, I played one of those 8-hour spanning epic games of Monopoly on the 4th of July that just really made everybody in that room hate one another. And I didn't get home until 4 in the morning. That happens. It's terrible. So the thing about Monopoly Gamer that really appeals to me is you have to go pass go 8 times for it to be over. And that's it. That's what ends the game. And if you're playing with 4 people, that really means that you have 2 goes around the board to try to collect and do as much as you can.
Well, you'd think that, but I did bust this game out with my 2 daughters. And, you know, granted, my youngest one is 4. She didn't quite grasp everything about it, but she was doing well, you know, with a little bit of help, she was able to play the game. But we just, because of the luck of a roll and move game, you can sometimes land on spaces that you don't want to land on, particularly the go to jail space. We spent so many time hitting the go to jail space and going there. It was insane. And it actually drew out the game a lot longer than I thought it was going to go. We ended up, you know, it still ended up finishing quickly compared to regular Monopoly, or at least experiences that I've had with it. But it definitely wasn't like a 2-time ago around the board and we're all done.
Right. And that's not even a knock against the game.
No,
I mean, it's just as the RNG goes, RNG, look at me, with your dice rolls. I mean, there is a chance that everybody goes around the board once. I mean, 2 times and the game is over. And I really like that because it could be that quick, or you could have someone hit jail. You could have someone who hit something that advances them around the board faster, so you're triggering a boss fight earlier. Like, there is a real element of time to it. And considering just how, like, ingrained in the head of gamers, Mario gamers, that speed up of the time clock is once you only have 99 seconds left, I'm happy that they somehow incorporated that element into the game. That, like, you need to be deliberate in your moves, because if, like, I'm not going to buy this property, or, you know, or whatever.
Or
like,
maybe I can't buy this property.
Exactly. Sorry, Sean. like, if you don't have the money to fight the Koopa Kid when that Koopa Kid comes out, again, like, that's a chance at losing points that could mean the win for you.
You also might end up spending, because it's a die roll to beat the boss, you know, you have to roll a 5 or higher, or a 4 or higher, you know, whatever it is, depending on the boss. That element right there, you're paying to fight the boss. You might end up spending more points than you're actually making. Just a neat little give and take on that.
Yeah. No, I really like the game. I'm excited to play it again. And unfortunately, like, as you brought up, because you're the monster here, Zach, and I want to remind everybody of that.
Oh, naturally.
That there is the alternate way of playing the game where you're in control of 3 different characters and you can swap them out.
I am really excited to try that.
And if we only begin with 5 plus my Wario, that means that we need 3 more characters.
Well, I've already put in a request for, I feel I need the Luigi and the Diddy, so.
It really completes the set. I don't disagree with you. So, and I think that'll be fun. I think that, like, I like that there are already variations built in with the game. They took their time with this game. And that is what excites me about bringing it to table again.
Yeah. They definitely put some effort into it that I wasn't expecting. This evoked similar feelings that I had of playing Star Wars Risk. This one has a little bit more Monopoly put into it than Star Wars Risk has Risk put into it. But at the same time, it plays fast. It was fun. And honestly, that's all that matters. We were laughing. We were having fun. I played it with my kids. They were laughing and having fun. They instantly recognized these characters, even though I don't know when they've really ever played any Mario games, because I don't have any game systems with them. I think they've played Mario Kart with their cousins and stuff like that. But they know the characters, and they were having fun with it. The only thing I had to do was explain to my four-year-old the text on the cards for the special powers. And that, to me, was really fun, was the special powers. You know, that added an element to the game of, you know, Monopoly that was never really there before, at least not to my knowledge. I know there's a million versions of Monopoly. But I can't knock this game. It was fun. If, you know, one of my favorite podcasts, Flip the Table, has taught me anything, it doesn't matter what the game is. You know, if it's fun, then it's a good game. And this one was fun. You know, some people are still going to bash it, but I don't care. I liked it. I recommend it.
I also recommend it. I really, despite the fact that everybody was really unfair and really mean to me, and I think they were doing it on purpose, I really did like the game a lot. Something else I kind of appreciate, I'm on Amazon, Monopoly Game Gamer Edition Power Pack, random. Like, yeah. You don't even have to pick. They'll just give you one for $8.
$8? That's too much, man.
Yeah,
they're
don't pay
$4 at GameStop, and you get to pick. And also, I was going to point this out. GameStop is the only one where they're not blind bag. They will be once it gets to Walmart, which it might already be at Walmart, the vanilla version of the game.
Yeah.
Those ones that they sell at Walmart are going to be completely blind bagged.
Interesting. So that's why it's random. So, but they're only $4 if I drive to a store and go look.
Oh,
dude,
no,
it's
$4
if you
store.
Go to the website too.
Oof,
you just go to GameStop.com and you can just buy it there. And also, Zach, I think it's odd that the one in your location didn't have any of that available, because a week ago I was there and I looked through to see if they had any characters that I was interested in.
Well, I went there probably 3 weeks ago when the game was first announced, so that might be why. I have not been able to go back into that store since.
Well, if you're looking for Rosalina, spoilers, I bought her already.
She wasn't on my radar. I don't even know
if I'm
who
buying
Rosalina
Luigi,
is from.
I need to buy her her
She's from Mario Galaxy.
And she's great. She's fantastic.
I can't remember if I've ever played Mario Galaxy. I think I played it once or
twice. It was on the Wii.
It was on the Wii, yes. Then I have played it, but I don't remember much about it. But, all right, so general consensus, I think we really enjoyed the game. I can't think of anything that needs to change other than, this is gonna sound negative. I don't understand why it had to be Monopoly. Like, this game felt like Mario Party the game. Why didn't they just embrace that and go full on Mario Party the board game? But that being said, what they did put in for Monopoly, it wasn't, you know, it didn't hurt the game in any way. The properties felt a little bit weird as far as the theming of Mario goes, but they weren't that intrusive. There's almost no trading whatsoever in the game at all. And basically you just buy these spaces, and then when people land on it, they give you coins. So it just added to the fun. I like it. Check out Monopoly Gamer. It's fun.
Yeah, if I had a complaint, it would be it needs a little less Monopoly, but the Monopoly that's there isn't intrusive, and you can have fun even if you're just a fan of Mario. 5 stars, 2 thumbs up. Devin Decker approved.
All right. Any final thoughts, guys?
Yoshi will have his revenge.
I hope so.
Yoshi will return in Monopoly Gamer 2.
I think the three character aspect is going to fix a lot of that.
Yeah. No. That'd be great. And plus, we get a different rotation of characters in there. I never got to really take advantage of my powers. Like, I could shoot a shell in either direction. I never rolled the shell, so it didn't even matter.
Well, your other power is to pick up everything off the board.
Pick up everything on the, yeah.
But that
which
never happened
I
for you.
Never landed on
if
any
that
stars
had,
bases,
your money so. Problems would have been solved.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
All right. I think that wraps it up. That wraps up this episode of Bored with Friends. If you have questions to ask, grievances to make, or comments to deliver, feel free to email us at boardwithfriends42@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at boardwithfriend. Like us on Facebook, or check out our website, boardwithfriends.blogspot.com. If you enjoyed this show, check out some other podcasts like The Say Report, the Local Multiplayer Podcast, or the Fan Holes Podcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.